Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 392, and today we are talking about our favorite fiction of 2022 and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here is Vanessa Diaz, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Vanessa, hello!
Hi, Liberty. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. We had a little bit of chaos prior to recording that is my fault, yeah. But we made it, and we're here.
Well, it's not your fault. It's technology's fault.
Yes, but glad it worked out, and we get to do this thing and have it go good from here on out.
Yeah, hopefully. You just, like, jinxed us now. I've become very superstitious since I started watching basketball all the time.
You know, like, that'll do it.
Yeah, like, my husband and the woman that I talk basketball with, they were both like, oh, the Celtics are going to win the championship this year. And I was like, shh, what are you doing? Stop yeah. it. Don't jinx it. You know, and so now everything is like, eh. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Well, we can blame it on me again.
All right. Yeah. It was you. Everything is fine. It's all going to be good.
It is.
We are talking about our favorite fiction of the year because it's the end of the year.
Yep.
Just wow. It was kind of fun, though. Not having to read anything for this episode and for next week's episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I also, you know, had a second job for some time that was done in August. So I've had this, like, random time to read things that I don't have to read. And I pick some weird stuff. I'm, like, way in, like, the weird backlist. But it's kind of fun.
That's a fun place to be.
Yeah, but I've also found that more now than ever, I have started, like, the largest number of books that I have going. I'm like, I want to read this. And I start reading it, and I read, like, you know, a quarter to half of it, and then I get distracted by something else. Yep. Not because what I'm reading isn't good. I mean, sometimes it is, but, you know, and then I think I have, like, 17 books going right now.
Oh, my gosh. I have, like, 5, and I was feeling proud of myself.
Well, that's my usual, like, 5, you know, 4 or 5. But I kept putting stuff down and then realized, like, looking at my PDF reader, I was like, oh, yeah, I have half read, like, 15 of these.
Yep.
It's fun, though, but I'm going to try and clean it up this weekend. Because that's also fun, is, like, when you read a bunch of books at once and then you finish them all at the same time, you feel very accomplished.
Yeah, I've been texting Jamie nonstop. We call them, like, our candy reads, because, like, I am basically in the same position where I no longer have any new reading to do for the remainder of the year, and that's, like, precious, precious time where, you know, I love doing the show, but because of the demands of it, I'm essentially reading mostly books that come out, you know, like, you know, on specific days. So this is just fun to go back and go, nope, I don't have to read anything based on release date, or I can just, like, read backlist, and I am a little, like, the choice is a little bit almost overwhelming, but in a fun way, where I'm like, it feels like I get to go shop my bookshelves, and yeah, it's fun.
Well, for my last job, I was reading almost exclusively thrillers and true crime, which gets very intense and stressful after a while. Sometimes I'm like, I should get hazard pay. And so now, like, I'm just reading all this ridiculously fluffy stuff where I'm like, is this bunny going to do something terrible to that other bunny? No.
No, he's going to be a bunny.
But I mean, I've just read so much of it. I'm just like, ah.
Aw. You see danger in every corner.
Yeah, it was really an experience to be like, okay, I'm going to read this novel about, you know, people being murdered. And then I'm going to read this book tonight where people really were murdered.
Oh, yay! My gosh.
It was a lot of that. But it was fun. I mean, obviously, it was a great time. But like, now I'm like, oh, this is in a tea shop. That's it.
That's speaking my language, as you know. Yeah.
So before we get started, I have a couple of things to tell you. Well, actually, first, we're going to hear from a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Penguin Team. In a world where the children of the gods inherit their powers, a descendant of the Greek Fates must solve a series of impossible murders to save her sisters, her soulmate, and her city. Descendants of the Fates are always born in threes. There's one to weave, one to draw, and one to cut the threads that connect people to the things they love and to life itself. And the Aura sisters are no exceptions. There is Io, the youngest, who uses her Fate-born abilities as a private investigator, but her latest job leads her to a horrific discovery. Somebody is abducting women and setting the results resulting wraiths loose in the city to kill. Now, the second book in the series, Hearts That Cut, will be on sale June 18th, 2024. This is a must-read for all Greek mythology and fantasy fans. This is dripping with atmosphere, edged with danger. Threads That Bind weaves together a gorgeous dark tapestry of mystery, faded romance, and modern myth. You won't be able to put this one down, and that comes from Alexandra Bracken, New York Times bestselling author of Lore. So make sure to pick up Threads That Bind by Kitsa Hatsopoulou, and thanks again to Penguin Teen for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebooks Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, and thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, and now I have one thing to tell you. I lied about me telling you a couple of things. But this other thing I would like to tell you is that it's gift-giving time, and if you are looking for the perfect gift for the book nerd in your life, you can give them tailored book recommendations. Your special someone will tell our professional book nerds, we call them bibliologists, about what they love and what they don't love, what their reading goals are, and what they need more of in their bookish life. Then, they just sit back while our bibliologists go to work selecting books just for them. TBR has plans for every budget. You can gift one quarter or a whole year. You can give hardcovers in the mail or recommendations only via email. And the recommendations only level is available worldwide. So you can visit mytbr.co/gift to give the gift of books. That's mytbr.co/gift. And now, we're going to talk about our favorite fiction of the year. I don't know about you. It was, like, really hard for me to choose.
Oof.
I had a couple that were, like, so steadfast, hard. But the rest I had to pick from a hat. Because
I essentially did something similar. So, yes.
But it will surprise no one that I'm going to kick mine off with what is probably my favorite book of the year, but no. Don't tell the other books. It is Unlikely Animals by Annie Hartnett. Oh my goodness. I love this novel so much. I've read it seven times now, I think. And oof. I just love it more every time, which I didn't think was possible. It's about a young woman named Emma Starling. She's from a small town in New Hampshire called Everton. When Emma was born, she had a magic ability. She had the gift of healing. Like, she heals the nurse's skin rash, like when she's being delivered, like by touching the baby, her rash is healed. Like, for some reason, she can heal with touch. But her parents are worried about her being exploited, you know, being studied, you know, like, word getting out about this. So they tell her that she's not allowed to use it. As she grows up, she's not allowed to do this. But they do think that she'd be great, you know, healing people in general as a theory. And they want her to go to medical school. And so her whole life, they've been telling her she needs to go to medical school. And they send her off. And like, she gets into medical school because she's like, this is what I'm supposed to do, I guess, you know. But she's not really sure about it. And when she gets to medical school, she's like, this is not what I want to do. And she's not enjoying it. And then she receives word from her mother that her father, Clive, is dying. He's dying of an unknown brain disease, and she wants her to return home. And Emma thinks it's because her mother wants her to try and heal Clive. And she doesn't even know if she has that ability anymore. But, you know, Clive is okay sometimes. He's talking to himself a lot. But what we know is that Clive is actually talking to the ghost of a real-life New Hampshire naturalist from the early 1900s. Like, he can see the ghost. He also buys a very expensive fox on the internet, like you do. And her mother has her hands full because we've got Clive doing all these weird things. Her brother is home. He's a recovering opioid addict. And he's, you know, working really hard every day to stay sober. Also, Emma finds out that her best friend from high school is missing. And no one seems to care except for Clive. Clive has been putting up missing posters for her friend around town, but everyone else has written her off as a runaway. So Emma has a lot going on when she returns home and decisions to make. And there's, like, that's just, like, the tip of the iceberg. There are so many other things going on in this book, but, like, in the best way, just, ugh. So good. Unlikely Animals shows us that you don't have to have all the answers. It's okay to change your mind about big life decisions, and you can have complicated feelings about your family. It's heartwarming and sad and funny. The narrators are the best. I'm not going to tell you who they are because it spoils the book, but I've read this 7 times. I love it. It's Unlikely Animals by Annie Hartnett.
I love the way your voice dropped at the end of I've read it 7 times.
I don't know where to put the emphasis on read this book right now.
I have it on my library holds. I have for a while since you requested it or recommended it. So it's coming. I feel compelled. I'm really glad that I remembered that this is even the case, but that this is just a fiction episode because I was having the hardest time. Because I'd forgotten for a second that that's what we were talking about, and having my nonfic in there made it even harder. And I was like, what do I narrow down? And then I realized it like 4 days ago. I was like, oh, okay, this makes it slightly easier, only slightly. Because I love a lot of the stuff that I've read, and I cannot believe that this first one, I think, is maybe the first book I read of the year I had to question when it came out, and that is Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez. The book opens it takes place in like 2017. It's about a woman named Olga and her brother. And Olga and her brother are both like really well known in New York. They have, the brother has become a popular congressman who is trying to represent and like work against really like the gentrifying of like their neighborhood in Brooklyn. And Olga is a wedding planner for like the Manhattan elite. And they lead obviously very like publicly kind of glamorous lives, but behind the scenes, things are a little more complicated as they often are in families due to some like family secrets. Mainly that their mom, Blanca, left them, like abandoned them when they were kids to go basically, she turned radical. Like she's a part of an organization that's working, I believe, for the like liberation of Puerto Rico, but again, has like these radical tendencies. And so she decided that like that cause, you know, which was very passionate about, was more important than like being around for her children. And obviously Olga and her brother have feelings about that. So the story is like set against the backdrop of New York, and you get, I did this one on audio, which I highly recommend because you get narration from the mom's perspective, writing letters to Olga, and then Olga obviously leading her life and kind of trying to resist love when she meets somebody who, you know, is not like her in a million ways, but that she's like starting to fall for. And then the brother trying to navigate what it's like to be, you know, in the public eye as a politician and get all these things done that are on your agendas, but like realizing you need funding and that public perception changes at the drop of a dime. And it was just so great. It's like full of, you know, family drama. It examines political corruption, the like idea of the American dream, and the voice in which it's told is just so fantastic. Like, I loved watching a Latina try to kind of figure out that balance of like, you know, being who I am and like where I'm from, but also like kind of got to play these, you know, rich people's games if I'm going to like get ahead. So it was just really, really, really fantastic and like moving book, and also, you know, fun and funny at times. So that's Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez.
All right. It's amazing how many of these books, like, I feel like that just came out, and I think that was, we talked about that on the first episode of the year, possibly. Like, it's amazing to me how fast this time goes. I know I say that all the time, but I have a very small world. You know? So, my next pick for today is All This Could Be Different by Sarah Tancam Matthews. This was an NBA finalist, not for basketball. This was a National Book Award finalist. It is a debut about a queer first-generation Indian American who has moved to Milwaukee. Sneha moves to Milwaukee for a job after college, and it's kind of exciting at first because this is going to be the start of her life with a capital L. Like, she's out of school, she's going to be an adult life, She's going to get to do what she wants. You know, she starts making money. She's dating women. But it doesn't, like, the happiness doesn't last very long. You know, she's sending money home to her family in India. Her boss becomes a real problem and is withholding paychecks for jerky reasons. The property manager in the building where she lives is a nightmare. She meets a dancer online that she begins dating, and Sneha thinks this is going to be her first amazing adult relationship. You know, she's really smitten, and this is going to be, like, the first one, but it's a complicated mess, you know, for reasons on both sides. But, you know, it's a story about trying to figure out your start in life and also secrets and traumas that shape us and dictate our decisions as adults. Sneha has a lot of things that she needs to work through, you know, and this is the complexities of navigating all the things she wants and all the things she is in a world that neither wants to give her the things she wants or allow her to be who she is. It's an astounding debut. The writing is spectacular. There were no surprises that it was nominated. It was my pick for winning the National Book Award, which it did not. But, I mean, what an amazing way to start off a writing career, you know? So this is All This Could Be Different by Sarah Tancam Matthews.
That sounds phenomenal. I'm going to read that. I'm going to read everything. What else is new?
Just here's a tip. Just start every single one.
That's clearly the Liberty School of book reading.
That's what I've started doing.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, what saved me from, like, some of the picks that you have slated further down the line is just that I started them and haven't finished. And it's fine. Like, it's, and again, like Liberty said, a lot of that is not about the book not being good. It's just like, oh, goldfish. Like, I get distracted and, you know, and and then some of it I've been, like, I don't know, stretching it out to savor. This is, we're a broken record, but y'all know what this life is like, or you wouldn't be here. So
I really appreciated that you chose some of my favorite books so that I had room for other ones.
See, symbiotic relationship we have going on here. My next pick is also one of my favorites, definitely high contender for one of my favorite books of the year, and that is How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Angie Gruss. And I am so bad about talking about this book succinctly, even though it's really short, but I'm going to try. So it's from the author of Dominicana, which was a book that made a big splash a couple years ago. It's a quick read, like less than 200 pages. It's like a 6-hour, I think, audiobook. It's set during the Great Recession, so, like, you know, 2008 in New York, specifically in the Bronx. And the main character, the only real character or, like, protagonist of the book is Cara Romero. She is a Dominican woman in her mid-50s who has suddenly found herself laid off from her job because the factory, like, upped and relocated to Costa Rica. And the book is told through the course of her, I can't remember if it's 8 or 10 something, counseling sessions at the unemployment office. So she's going, you know, reporting to the unemployment office, like, because she has, in order to, like, get, you know, unemployment benefits, and they're trying to find her a job. And I don't know how to do this book justice, which I think is exactly what I said last time, but it's through these visits where she's doing, I'd say, like, 98% of the talking, like, at one point you hear from the unemployment counselor, but it's just telling her story. And she's supposed to be there to, like, talk about, you know, needing employment and, like, what she's been doing to find employment. But as often is the case with my Latina people, kind of goes off on these tangents that are, like, about the woman in the neighborhood, or, like, let me tell you about that time when I was a kid, and, like, let me tell you about this, let me tell you about my son who doesn't talk to me, and, like, why. And what sounds like it's going to be just a really funny story, and let me be clear, it is. Like, I feel like I know Cara. I feel like Cara is a member of my family, like a mixture of, like, 10 different people in my family. But she's also, like, she shares these really heart-wrenching moments when you get to know, like, the reason why she isn't speaking to her son, or what life was like in her marriage when she was married back in, you know, the Dominican Republic. And in one moment, you're cracking up at just, like, the funniness of who she is. And then in the next, you're like, oh my gosh, generational trauma. And it's magical how she does this in this really short book. So it's fantastic. There's a lot of Spanglish in there. It is also fantastic on audio, but great in print as well. I've read this book twice. And it's, oh, just so good. I hope more people read it. And that's How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Angie Gruss.
All right. My next pick is one that you've probably heard about a million times this year. Because it's amazing. It is Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. This one just won the best sci-fi novel of the year on Goodreads. It was voted best sci-fi novel. This is my favorite of hers so far, which is saying a lot because she's amazing. But, oh my goodness, this one just clung to my heart. It's I think her shortest novel. And also, it does contain minor spoilers for The Glass Hotel, but you won't even really notice unless you're, like, really looking for them. It's like a futuristic lullaby. It takes place in several different times. There's a young man who flees polite society after a social snafu, because that's what happens, you know, hundreds of years ago, if you embarrass yourself in public. He ends up in the Canadian wilderness, and he experiences something he cannot explain. Then there's an author, 2 centuries in the future, who lives in a colony on the moon, because we are leaving the Earth, because it's a horrible, horrible place. But she is visiting Earth on book tour, because in the future they still make authors go on book tours. And there's also something in the book that she has written that is related to what the young man in the Canadian wilderness experienced. There's also something happening on Earth at that time that is making it hard for her to get home, to get back to the moon. And there's also a detective who is investigating this same experience, this shared experience or knowledge that the author and the young man in the wilderness have. There's lots of music in the book. There's a violin player, and the book just sort of moves like music. And I think I said this when I talked about it when it came out, because I was so enraptured. I was so caught up in this story, because sometimes when I'm not, I can hear my brain going, let's try and figure out what's going to happen. Well, this is what, you know. And when I'm caught up in a story and loving it, like, my brain doesn't do that. So I was so moved by this book and caught up in it that I gasped at the end because I didn't see it coming. And then I was delighted because I love when that happens. It's just so beautiful and amazing. It's Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel.
I've never read Emily St. John Mandel. I'm a bad person.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, this would be a great place to start.
Ooh.
Because it's slim and amazing. Yeah. And like I said, there are some minor spoilers for The Glass Hotel, but if you've not read The Glass Hotel, you won't even know.
I am probably fine. Yeah, and I won't, like, yeah, it's been, like, I literally have, it, like, a physical TBR, and I have all her books on there. Yeah. It's just, yeah, you know,
like. And it's not anything that you need to know to, like, make the book work. So, it's.
Oh,
it's,
yay.
No, yeah.
Maybe that'll be one of my candy reads in December. We'll see. I love my next pick so much, and I want to gift it to lots of people. I think it would make a great gift book. It's just so good. It's Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson. I've talked about this in a lot of different places at Book Riot. So if you, you know, engage with Book Riot on different platforms and mediums, and like, so sorry you're hearing about this again, but it's that good. It is a book that I actually picked up, which I think I actually said on the show when I was like planning on reading it, because Patricia, one of the co-hosts of the show, was talking about it on Instagram, and all she said was like, if you want to read a book that is about like magic and witches and don't want to support a raging transphobe, like, I recommend this as like a nice replacement. And I was like, oh, cool, perfect. And like, picked it up, and like, that's literally all I knew about it. Then I, you know, did obviously read a little bit about it once that hold came in, and it was pitched as a discovery of witches meets The Craft, which like is basically my blood type. And it's the first in an epic fantasy trilogy about these 5 childhood friends who are all witches. They, when the book opens, they're like about to go through their like witch ceremony. But they've grown apart ever since this really big schism split up their coven. And the coven is now, so there's like the official quote unquote coven, which is under like the crown. So it's called Her Majesty's Royal Coven. It's headed by one of the friends in the group who is the one who's kind of a little bit snooty about magic. And you'll see some comparisons to one JKR potentially in the way she operates. And then one of the other friends like basically split off and said no and started this other coven that is more inclusive, especially of the queer community and like witches of color. And they all are, you know, they kind of are friends, I suppose, on like a very surface level, but they just can't, you know, look past these differences. And then what really kind of shakes everything up is that there's this prophecy that comes up about a kid with frightening powers who's going to like change the world, and of course one such kid surfaces, and the women are at odds basically at like how to handle this child who has powers that, you know, they don't understand. And then a magical war basically ensues, and then it I will tell you, this book ends on like a bit of a cliffhanger that I was like, what? And you like this. But the second book is coming, I think, in like March, April, May-ish. So it's just so much fun. Again, magic, spells. I've been bad about trigger warnings this time because I've been so excited. But for this book, I can tell you there's a trigger warning for like transphobia and general homophobia. But the book is so delightful and there's so much cursing. Also fantastic on audio. That again is Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Well, that was one of my fun reads that I was going to do this December, but now that you said it ends on a cliffhanger, I don't know.
I will say this. It's like the book itself wraps, and that's mm-hmm. why you don't, like, it's fine. Like, the events kind of wrap, and you're like, okay, cool. And then these last, like, three sentences are cliffhanger-y, but you still have a weird combo of, like, satisfaction. And if that, I don't know, I don't want to give anything away, but I think you could still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Up to you.
Yeah. I made a big mistake a few weeks ago because a book went up on Edelweiss that looked very similar, I think not by mistake, to the cover of this book. And it was, the author's last name was Dawson and their initials were like JR or something. And so I was oh, the sequel to Her Majesty. And, you know, Patricia and Jamie were like, ah! And they're like, that is not what that is. And I was like, oh no. I can read, you know, so. I was like, sorry. They were so excited, and I'm a bad person.
That cover design dupe thing is real, yeah. though. I catch it all the time.
They do it like, on purpose. You
sneaky snake. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like you're looking at it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that looks like that. Or you think it's that. That's what, and I also think that's why they change paperback covers a lot of the time. Sometimes it's because like, well, maybe it'll sell if the cover is different. But also I think, like, I can't tell you how many times I buy things in paperback that I had in hardcover because the cover is different. All right, so I'm very excited about this next book because we do not endorse books on the show that are sponsors for obvious reasons. So when we love a book, you know, if they're a sponsor of the show that week, you know, we don't talk about it. So I really want to talk about this book on the show, but they were a sponsor, which we're so grateful for. And so people got to hear about it anyway. And then I was like, well, I'll write about it in the newsletter, but it was also the sponsor of the newsletter that week. So I did not get to talk about it. And I was just like, bah! So here I am talking about it now. It is We Deserve Monuments by Jazz Hammond. This is a fantastic YA novel of family and queer love and racism in the South. It's about Avery Anderson, who is so mad because her mother has decided to disrupt her senior year in Washington, D.C. and move them to a small town in Georgia because Avery's mom is going to care for her terminally ill grandmother, Letty. Now, Letty and Avery's mom have had, they've been butting heads for a long time. They have a very complicated relationship. There is a lot of hurt and trauma and secrets involved. But like I said, her mother is dying, so she's going to go. Avery's not happy about this, but she does meet two really cool people, Simone and Jade. And she finds out that Jade's mother was murdered years ago, and the murder is still unsolved. And Avery decides a good way to pass the time would be to look around where she shouldn't and maybe figure out what happened to Avery's mother. And as she does, she begins to uncover some of the town's not-so-secret history of racism. And as she's doing this, her relationship with Simone moves from friendship to romance. It is a sweet, powerful, moving book. It's just a great story about young love, intergenerational trauma. It looks at racism and forgiveness with fresh eyes, I feel like. This is Hammond's debut novel. I cannot wait to see what they do next because everyone I know who has read this is just astounded by it, as they should be. I actually thought this would be a nominee for one of the National Book Award spots for young people's literature because, you know, it's incredible. And you know, Sabah Tahir, unbelievable. All My Rage, deserved to win. But, like, I also thought that this one would make it to the list because it's so, so good. It is We Deserve Monuments by Jazz Hammond.
Everyone I know who's read that has been raving about it. So, yes, yeah. It is time.
It's one of those books where I read it and I was like, I don't even know. Like, something about this makes it so much more magical than lots of the other books that I read. And I can't even describe it.
Well, I'm glad you got some space to talk about it today. Yeah, yes. I hate when that happens, so it's cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great. You know, at least people got to hear about it, but,
yes,
you know, not from me. I wanted to tell them.
I feel the same way. Whenever I don't get to talk about a book, I feel like the book has feelings, and I'm like, you know. Like, sorry, yes. Friend.
He was texting me later. I was like, why did you ghost me?
My next pick is one that I literally finished reading like 2 days ago, I think. And I picked it up as one that was, I think I maybe had it sitting in like my Libro queue. I was like, same, you know, going through books that I haven't gotten a chance to read. And I'm so glad that I did because it was delightful. And it's Kaikei by Vaishnavi Patel. So this book is based on a story that I was like, where did I first hear this story? And it was like kind of bugging me and like, I've heard, and I'll tell you about it in a second. And I was like, oh, I know where I've heard of this. I've heard of it since. But if you have watched the movie The Little Princess, you will recognize that the main character goes back and like at the beginning, like tells the story of the Ramayana. It is a Sanskrit, you know, Hindu epic. And it's the story of Lord Rama and his quest to rescue his wife Sita from the clutches of this demon king named Ravana. And this book is a feminist retelling of the story of this vilified character from the obviously much lengthier than what you get in that movie, Ramayana, the queen Kaikei. And so this book does, like, it goes all the way back to like her backstory, telling, you know, starts off with her birth and like the kingdom that she was born in. She's one of, I think, 7 siblings, including a twin name. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name right now. But she is not 100% satisfied with her life. Like, she doesn't have any interest in being married or in like physical intimacy, but she knows that as a woman, like, she's pretty much got no choice, that's coming. But she loves to like train with her brothers, and so she's actually really like athletic and physical and good at like warfare, you know, like those kinds of activities that all the boys are being trained in. And her mother at the very beginning of the book suddenly leaves, and no one really knows, like, she doesn't say why. But and of course this breaks the heart of her children. So Kaikei has to go on living, you know, without her mother. And then one day, while browsing through the library, finds these scrolls, and in those scrolls, like, detects that, you know, she reads them and comes into these powers, basically, where she can slip into this other plane where she can see, like, the literal ties that bind. Like, she sees cords that connect each, you know, her and everyone else, like, each other and to her. And has this very specific power whereby, like, touching them and either, you know, forcefully or not, can, like, influence people's will. And that she, you know, does essentially get married off because she has to. It breaks her heart because it's done in a way that, like, removes all of her choice, but thankfully ends up with a kind prince. And as in the epic, she was his second wife, but in this book, she's made the third for reasons that are not 100% clear. But she is, like, she's always been in history, and it is in this book, like, the wife with the most influence. But, like, the drama ensues when, for reasons that you'll have to read the book to discover, like, she ends up banishing one of her stepsons because she's one of, you know, 3 wives, for reasons that, like, we get to see in the book are with good intention, but that history has interpreted through the, you know, in the lens of the epic as being, like, she's the villain. She's, like, the villainous queen who did this awful thing out of jealousy to put her own son on the throne. This has comps to Cersei, and I don't know that that's 100%. Like, Cersei lives in a very special place in my heart, but definitely does that thing of wanting to give, like, a backstory and another way to look at a character who has, you know, traditionally been the villain in the story. I have seen some reviews saying the one thing they don't like about this book is that she's painted as, like, having really altruistic intentions throughout, and that sometimes, like, you can still give, like, you don't have to be, like, the good person all the time to be an interesting character. So I will take that. I think that's maybe right. But anyway, the book is so good. I've been talking too long about it. But if you are wanting to read some really interesting remixes of, like, mythologies that are not the ones that we're used to seeing from, like, the, you know, Greco-Roman canon, pick this one up. That's Kaikei by Vaishnavi Patel.
I love this book. I think another great comp for it would be The Witch's Heart, if anyone has read that.
Yes. That's a perfect comp. Ooh, yeah.
So, we're going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's, like, the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irina is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds. College student Blake and her girlfriend have one goal: join the exclusive sorority that promises connections to a network of trailblazing women of color. Now, Ella's acceptance is a sure thing. She's a daughter of a Serena Society alum, after all. Blake, on the other hand, lacks Ella's pedigree and her confidence. Luckily, though really unluckily, she finds courage at the bottom of a liquor bottle. When she drinks, she's bold and funny, and as pledging intensifies, so does Blake's drinking. Ella assures her that she's fine, partying hard is what it takes, but with her future on the line, Blake must decide how far she's willing to go to achieve glittering dreams of success. Now, just so you know, Jazz Hammonds is the 2023 winner of the Critics Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent for We Deserve Monuments, and We Deserve Monuments was an Amazon Best Books of the Year and Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year for 2023, so suffice to say, y'all should check this new one out. Thanks again to Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so I'm totally going to cheat a little bit about my number of picks. And I just want to say, I want to throw in a mention of They're Going to Love You by Meg Howery, which I talked about on the November 15th show. So I feel like that wasn't long enough ago to use a spot here, but it did upset my whole year because it's one of the best books that I've read this year. If you love A Little Life, if you love Tell the Wolves I'm Home, if you love The Great Believers, you want to pick this up now and go back to the November 15th show and listen because it's so good. So there, I said that. So now I'm going to talk about this book because I think it came out like the first week of January, and I feel like no one is mentioning it right now, and I'm so mad. It's Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukovka. And, oh, so good. I know you and I both keep doing that for each book. It's like, yes, these are our favorite books of the year. That's why they're so good. But we both keep going, I love this so much. And yeah. But this is kind of a crime novel, but it's also a family drama. It's about a man named Ansel Packer, who is a serial killer. He is on death row, and he's like a Ted Bundy type serial killer. He's very handsome and charming, and he is due to be executed, like, very soon. And as his execution date approaches, we hear the story of the women in his life. It's told through the lens of these women in his life. From his mother, who gave birth to him as a young teen and hasn't seen him since he was a toddler, to the twin of his wife, Ansel's wife's sister, who has always thought that he was a bad man, to the detective who has been hunting the killer of several young women and finally found him, it was Ansel, to a guard on death row where he awaits his execution. It's about the violence and toxic masculinity and societal expectations placed on girls and women that they experience through their whole lives. It's not about his crimes. We don't see them described. It's about his victims, as well as, you know, not just the women who died, but the ones who are left behind in the aftermath of his crimes. It's gorgeous and hard to read at times because it's so true to life. You know, these are things that have happened to women throughout history, and sometimes it's overwhelming, but it's also very powerful and hopeful too. And there's this one thing that I think about all the time that happened in the book, and I actually messaged the author to tell her because there's something that happened that makes me cackle almost on a daily basis. Every few days, I remember and I cackle. And you have to read the book to know what I'm talking about, but it's so good. It's Notes on an Execution, and it's by Dania Kukovka.
You're totally right that book isn't getting enough buzz, and it was actually recently like heavily discounted and got featured by me because I picked it in one of our daily deals roundups. And when I tell you that, I mean, it was one of the highest number of like titles people have purchased from that newsletter, and I was glad to see it because I realized that it was kind of like not getting the buzz, and now a lot of people are apparently reading it, so hopefully that's going to change.
Well, I feel like it's a thing that happens to books. The books at the beginning of the year are forgotten. And the books at Beginnings the end of the year are forgotten because people are already making their best of lists. And if they haven't read, you know, books that aren't out yet, you know, then...
Yeah.
So it's good to be published in the middle of the year. Yes. That's what we're here for.
Yes. And why we take all these books' feelings into consideration.
That's right. So they don't text us and say, why are you ghosting?
Yeah, okay. No texts. No ghosting texts. I was about to say I love my next pick. Duh. Anyway,
I can't help it.
It's so good. This one's The Book Eaters by Sun Yi Dean. I actually started this one in print and then heard from a friend that the audio was really good and narrated by someone from like the North, like which the author is also like that's where she grew up. And was like, oh, I just want to listen to like a different non-received pronunciation, you know, accent, which is what a lot of like regular English narration is, British English. So this book is set in the New Yorkshire Moors and it's about a line of people who literally eat books to survive. Like that's how they ingest information. So the main character whose name is Devon, like that's, she know everything that she knows. It's because she's eaten that book and like those messages have been absorbed. She doesn't actually know how to read or write because again, she eats the books. That's how the information comes to her. And so she's part of this family and doesn't realize though that as part of this family, which is this very secretive and reclusive clan, that she is as sheltered as she is. But she is, you know, obviously being raised by them. And then at one point finds out that she's going to like be a mother. And like, I can't remember if what I was about to say is spoilery or not, so I won't get into it. But like a really heartbreaking thing happens to her that she didn't see coming because it wasn't really explained to her. But in the second time, essentially, let's just flash forward and say that she ends up having a son. And she wants to protect that son at all costs. And doing so means she's going to have to split from her family and really have to question, like, what good and evil and, like, right and wrong are to protect her son, who is born with this, like, rare and darker kind of hunger, not to eat books, but to eat people's minds. And that is a literal thing we're talking here and, like, dangerous. So we follow this, like, badass main character, again, struggling with sort of just her internal feelings on like, this is how I was raised. This is all I know. And now I'm meeting people and like learning all the things that I didn't know. And I have to protect my son, but he's like kind of doing a terrible thing. How do I do this? It's just so enriching and nuanced and like dark and twisty. The narration is fantastic. The story is so great. The author, there's lots of really great interviews that you can look up. And I think actually the audiobook wraps with an interview between the author and the narrator, who are both Northern and I believe neurodivergent, and just talks about like how that informed parts of the story. And I found that like just a perfect little like cherry on top of the sundae after having read this book. So much fun. I loved it. I want to read it again. That's The Book Eaters by Sun Yi Dean.
It is so good.
It is.
All right. I realize that we gotta talk faster.
We gotta wrap it up.
Yeah. Because we each still have like three and...
I'll make it faster.
Yeah. Okay. So my next pick is Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield, which you've heard me talk about a million times because I read it in July of 2021 when I saw a tweet from Kristen Arnett saying it was the best book of 2022. And she was not wrong. It's amazing. It's about a married couple named Mary and Leah. Leah is a marine biologist. She takes a job with a new company. And part of that job is going to the ocean floor in a submarine for a two-week excursion. Well, 2 weeks goes by and the submarine does not reemerge from the ocean. And Mary doesn't know what to do. Weeks go by and then months. Mary's beginning to believe that she has to accept that her wife has been lost to the sea. She can't get any answers from Leah's bosses. Nobody's heard from them. And then, impossibly, the sub returns after 2 months. Leah is a different person when she emerges from that submarine. She runs the taps in the faucet day and night. She won't eat. She sleeps in the tub. Mary continues to try and get answers from Leah's bosses, but she's getting nothing. And between Mary's story of, you know, her anxiety and like trying to figure out what's happened to her wife, we learn about what is happening with Leah in the submarine. It's a beautiful love story. That's how I feel about it. I have been told by everyone else who has read it that it's a horror novel. I did not find it to be scary, except for like the being trapped on the ocean floor part or being in a submarine. Like those things scare me. The ocean scares me, but I can see it's very strange. I can see why some people might call it a horror novel. I don't care what people call it as long as they read it because it's beautiful. I loved it so much. It is Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield.
Yes, another one from my list. I'm going to make this next one speedy mostly because I don't know what I did to my notes on this book. The stuff I have pasted here is for the book I just talked about, so I'm going to have to do this on the fly. But my next pick is The Ballad of Perilous Graves by Alex Jennings, another one of my favorites, obviously, from this year. Also a fantastic production on audio. And it is like a full-blown production where there's music and just extra stuff. And you'll see why as soon as I describe the book. It's this like love letter to New Orleans. And it's like a kind of a darker New Orleans, sort of like a city beneath the city where music is magic. And I mean, there's like mages and haints and this really vengeful wraith. And the main character is Perilous Graves, also goes by Perry. And he discovers basically that these 9 songs of power have escaped from the piano that maintains like the city's beat. And that like the person who plays that piano, whose name is escaping me right now, is like maybe missing. But then like he's been seen in a few places. So Perry and his sister, who's a little like baby sister, go on this mission that involves like going to cemeteries and talking to haints and doing all kinds of stuff to try to figure out essentially like what's happening with these songs of power and like what's happening to New Orleans. The audio is so good. Again, there's music built into it. Like I cannot remember the narrator, but does kids' voices in that way that's really perfect, where that's like not annoying, but actually quite just spot on. And again, the music, the magic, the like darker little sublayer of New Orleans, it's just, oh, it like captures it so beautifully. I want to go there immediately. But anyway, that is that. So good. That's The Ballad of Perilous Graves by Alex Jennings.
I love that book so much. And I will say that it drops you right into the world and you just have to hold on because all will be explained.
Yep.
Because when I started, I was like, I have no idea what's happening.
I had to do some of the print stuff. Yeah. Because I was like, what?
Yeah. I can't imagine like listening to it. But I mean, they're in an alternate version of New Orleans. There's a whole other story with the people in our version of New Orleans. Yep. And it's so layered and just amazing. But I'm going to stop talking about your book now. Let's talk about my next book because here we go. So my next pick is The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sangu Mandana. And woo! This book is such a freaking delight. If you need a feel-good story, this is it. It's about Micah Moon, who lives in Britain, who is a real witch. Witches are real, though there are very few of them. She's only one of 21 in England. They belong to this society. They're all orphans for some reason that they don't understand. When witches are born, their mothers die. And the head of the society adopted Micah from an orphanage in India when she was a baby and brought her to England. And the rule is that they only get to hang out at this meeting every third Thursday of every third month. Otherwise, they're not allowed to have any contact because supposedly witches together in one place can make bad things happen. So Micah is very lonely and she picks up this new hobby making videos. She makes witchcore videos where she pretends to be a witch doing some tricks that people assume are, you know, special effects when they're watching them at home, but she's actually really doing these tricks. And then one day she gets this message from someone saying, we have these 3 young witches living in this house and we need someone to tutor them. Will you come do it? And she's like, well, that's not possible because, you know, we don't know about these young witches in the society and, you know, they shouldn't all be together in one place. But she's intrigued. So she drives out to this hidden estate in the country, and she can feel the magic when she gets there, and it is indeed true. There are these 3 young witches who are there. She meets an elderly man and his husband, the housekeeper, and a handsome but very grumpy librarian of her age, and she decides that she's going to help them out because these young witches, without some schooling and some training in how to use their powers are growing, and they're going to become out of control. And they are in danger of a man who's going to be visiting the house very soon. So Micah decides to help these girls. And, you know, it's just, you know, she's got the hots for the librarian guy. He's got the hots for her. It's just utterly charming. So charming. I loved it to pieces. She has a great dog. Speaking of Cersei, she has a dog named Cersei, who is like the best golden retriever that there is in fiction. I know that you all have the best golden retrievers, but in fiction, the best golden retriever that there is. and it's just so charming. It's The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sangu Mandana.
I need to finish that. It's so delightful. We don't have time to keep talking about this, but it's so good from what I've read, and now I just need to finish. One of my last picks is, again, I was like, oh, this came out this year. I love it. Why, I'm going to talk about it. It's Anatomy, A Love Story by Dana Schwartz. I love Dana Schwartz. She is the host of one of my favorite podcasts called Noble Blood. That is a podcast that goes throughout history, talks about initially royalty, and then some of that has also been expanded to just other like really powerful figures throughout history, and talks about kind of like their untimely or grisly demise and like what brought it about. It's just, it's so interesting. And if you're a history buff, like you will love. So this book is her YA debut. She's written other books, but I think this is her YA debut. And it's about a young woman in the 1800s Edinburgh who wants to be a surgeon. But of course, it's 1800s Edinburgh, so she can't be because she's a woman. But she's like, well, I'm going to do this come hell or high water. Finds her way into like the lectures and then the class of this very renowned surgeon named Dr. Beecham. And even though it's clear that she is like basically the smartest and most devoted person in this room, she does eventually get kicked out for being the wrong gender. So she strikes like an agreement with Dr. Beecham, you know, makes her case and basically says like, look, I'll make you a deal. Like if I can pass this medical examination that you do at the end of the semester on my own, like without having taken class, can I, like, will you basically allow me to, I think, study under her and like, you know, obviously help her become a surgeon? He's like, yeah, sure. We'll do that. So that's what she does. Like she goes away. And through this chance encounter with a resurrection man, so somebody who may or may not take, you know, bodies that have been interred and sell them to the person with the highest bid for whatever their, you know, complicated reasons are, teams up with him to basically study, you know, human anatomy on these interestingly acquired corpses. And then there are feelings, and it's 18th century, you know, Edinburgh, and it's like haunted and fun, and there's a little twist that I didn't quite see coming. But yeah, really great. If you liked like The Way of All Flesh, so just love like historical fiction with like a medical mystery angle to it, this is really fun. And that's Anatomy, A Love Story by Dana Schwartz. And there's a sequel coming called Immortality, A Love Story.
Yes. So this is probably my favorite cover of the year. It has a young woman so with the skirt awesome. Of her dress arranged around her to look like a heart. And I thought nothing could beat it, but Immortality, which is coming in February, has a woman with the skirt of her dress arranged around her to look like a brain.
I know.
It's amazing.
Ugh, so good. Like the folds. Yeah, it's great.
Whoever came up with this deserves a raise. Like that cover designer needs a raise. So my last pick for today is one that I feel like no one is talking about. And it hurts my heart because I love it so much. It's One's Company by Ashley Hudson. It's about a young woman named Bonnie Lincoln who has experienced a devastating trauma in her life. And now she just wants to be left alone. She wants to go to work. She wants to come home. She wants to watch her favorite show, which is Three's Company, and forget about the world until she has to go back to work. And that's just how she wants to exist. But then one day she plays the lottery and she wins. And she wins big, like hundreds of millions of dollars. And she realizes this is her chance to get away, you know, like from people, from everyone. She hires a company to secretly build a replica of the Three's Company set in a secret mountain location. Like, what? Like, what a wild premise. And no one else is allowed to know about it. It's just going to be her. She makes everybody sign NDAs, and they do it. They build a replica of the Three's Company set, and now this is her paradise. She's going to live there alone, and she's going to act out scenes by herself. And the thing is that you can only keep the outside from getting in for so long. There is a friend who is looking for her, and she also has this unresolved trauma from what happened to her, and she's going to be spending all this time alone, and it's not healthy. It is just wildly original and heartbreakingly sad. It's an excellent look at trauma and loneliness and American culture and excess. I can't stop thinking about it. I think about it all the time, and every once in a while somebody pops up on Instagram and says, I read that book and it's so good. And I'm like, yes, because it's so good. you know, I want it to be on more end of the year lists. It's like a darker Everyone in This Room Will Someday Be Dead by Emily Austin, which is one of my favorite books of last year. It's just so original and wild. It's One's Company by Ashley Hudson.
Okay, my last pick, which I'm also really bad at talking about briefly, but I'm going to try, and that is Husband Material by Alexis Hall. And this is kind of a lighter book, and at first I had weird feelings about including it. I'm like, but why? You love this series, and it's fantastic, and I want people to read it, and so here we are. And also, I'll read anything Alexis Hall writes. So it's about Luke and Oliver, who we met in the first book in this London Calling series. That one was Boyfriend Material. This one's Husband Material. Is this one a spoiler? I mean, if you know how a romance works, then probably not, so you can keep listening to this. this, but so the men, the couple are Luke and Oliver. And in the first book, they met because Luke basically needed somebody or a way to like clean up his image after some like interesting photos of him researched or surfaced, and he needed to like keep his job. And then there's that's Luke. And then Oliver is in their friend circle, but everybody thinks he's like posh and stuck up, but he looks good, like, you know, optics wise, because he's this barrister and like has his stuff together, and they like fake date, etc., etc. So in this book, they are dating, they're cohabitating kind of ish, and they are staring down the question of like whether the next step for them is to get married, because everybody around them is doing so. They go to several weddings together, and then issues start to arise about like what it like means to be queer, as far as like what community means to different folks in the queer community, and like what stereotypes feel like comforting and which ones feel limiting to folks, and how there's no like one right way to be queer and no one right way to be in like an adult and loving relationship. And the main reason why I'm putting this book on here is because I love the way that it explores communication, how like what healthy communication looks like when you're with somebody and don't always get along and don't always agree, but like how resolutions can come together by having like healthy, if not like very uncomfortable and sometimes heartbreaking conversations. Excellent, excellent, excellent on audio. You've heard me talk about how I'm like looking for someone who sounds just like the character who plays Luke. But the books are also hilarious. Alexis Hall does excellent dialogue. And it's a romance, so we know things are gonna turn out in the end. So, yep, one of my favorite series. There is a third confirmed, and this is Husband Material by Alexis Hall. Whew.
All right. So those are the books that we decided to talk about today that we love. What are you going to read next?
A whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, right.
I had to pop it in here at the last second. So I want to finish Society of Irregular Witches. That's coming that I didn't put on here. Also need to finish Killers of a Certain Age by Deanna Raiborn, which is so fantastic from what I've read so far. Like older lady spies. So excited.
Assassins.
Oh, I just want to read it so much. House of Hunger by Alexis Henderson, I believe. Yep. Oh my gosh, I hope I didn't get that wrong, right? Yeah. Oh, cannot wait. I loved Year of the Witching. And then Decagon House Murders has been on my list just like forever. It's a backlist title by Yukito Ayatsuchi, and it is a Japanese book that is inspired by And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie. So that's what I'm diving into.
All right.
How about you?
I'm reading Crooked Manifesto by Colson Whitehead, which is the sequel to Harlem Shuffle. Comes out on my birthday, July 18th. There's a lot of great books coming out on my birthday. Because they knew. And I also just picked up Muppets in Moscow, The Unexpected Crazy True Story of Making Sesame Street in Russia by Natasha Lance Rogoff, which I just saw the cover and was like, well, I need that. And I have a very lovely independent bookstore locally who's been delivering books to me because I haven't been able to get out. And so they just dropped it off today. And I was like, yes, this one. So that's what I'm going to do. And that's it for today. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. Visit mytbr.co/gift to give the gift of books. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com and tell us about your favorite books. You can find us online. We hang out on Instagram. Vanessa is BuenosDiasSD. I am Franzen Comes Alive. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes, although there are very few today, by visiting bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recommendations or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.